Right, y'all. I just want to take a quick second to talk about our sponsor, Sunbasket. I don't know if you know this about me, but I am not a big fan of grocery shopping or meal planning or anything that goes along with any of that. But I do very much care about eating healthy. But when you don't like to grocery shop or plan meals, it is really hard to cook healthy dinners for your family. And that's where Sunbasket comes in. They're a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. And you can pick and choose from recipe options like vegetarian, Mediterranean, carb conscious, the list goes on. We just had orzo bowls with broccoli, sun-dried tomatoes, and pea stew, and it was delicious. My kids even liked them. I can't speak to Sunbasket more. I love them. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitments to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very, very best. You just have to go to sunbasket.com/queerfam today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/queerfam to save $120, y'all, across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. Go do that. Get some healthy food. There you go. This episode is sponsored by Feather Snack. Okay, hold on, y'all. I have to tell you about something that my wife got us into and that my whole family is loving now. Brace yourselves. It's the Feather Snap Scout Smart Bird Feeder. Yes, I said bird feeder. This thing is so cool, and it offers a brand new way to connect with nature and learn about the birds right in your own backyard. Or, if you're like us, living in New York City, it's in your friend's backyard in the country, and you get to use the app connected to it to learn all the stuff. It's got this high-resolution camera that connects to an app, so you can check out a live stream from your feeder. You can take photos and videos of the birds that visit. You can ID the species using expert-trained AI, and you can earn badges along the way. You can even, y'all, learn fun facts about hundreds of species. For example, did you know that American crows can recognize and remember people's faces? And they can even teach their young who's a friend and who's a foe? I know that now. Did you? Seriously, the Feather Snap Feeder is entertaining, it's educational, and it's just a whole bunch of fun for the whole family. Check them out today at feathersnapcam.com. That's feathersnapcam.com. This episode is brought to you by our newest Patreon members, Sinetra Hart and Vair Poynton. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. I could not do this without you. I am so grateful to all of you who are making this show a possibility. You rock. You really do.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Amanda and Gab, OMG, Amanda and Gab are back from season 5, episode 29 as my guest co-hosts for this episode to help me introduce the interview that is coming up. I am so excited, have been so excited. Hello, Amanda and Gab.
Hello.
Hi, we're so excited to be back with you.
Oh my God, we were just talking about how when we did the interview, it was years ago, but it was in April, which we're doing right now. It's April again, but it was the height of the pandemic. Like we were in it.
We were 1 month into the pandemic when we recorded.
My God, it's been years. So many things have happened. So many things have happened. I know in your lives, so many things have happened because I follow you on the Instagram. So I know things are going on.
I see you. I'm like, look at my biggest fan. He's liking my stuff again.
Listen, can the two of you kind of give an overview of what your episode kind of was about? I mean, obviously it was about queer baby making because that's what this show is about. But can you give like a quick little overview of what your episode was so that we can get to where you are now?
Oh, sure. So in addition to talking about how we were pursuing our baby making at the time, we also talked about what we did with our clinic because we experienced microaggressions. You experienced what we identify as assault.
Yeah, I would just qualify it as a massive systems failure. in healthcare, and our motivation to make sure that systems were improved from our own experience to ensure that other people, especially queer folks, trans, non-binary folks, have a better relationship with fertility than the current systems at play.
We ended up working with that clinic to do all their back end, all their client care. We worked with them with HR and media, et cetera, to like really make sure that if they're going to put up the inclusion flag, that it's because they're actually practicing inclusive practices.
It's fantastic what you two did. I'm still in awe. I reference your episode all the freaking time, because instead of getting, it's like, it's so impressive. You're so badass. Like, instead of getting mad and like hurt and it's so hard for us, which is what I would probably do. You were like, here, this is what we're going to do for you. We're not going to be hurt from this. We're going to fix this. That takes strong people, first of all. And it just like means you're super smart and you know how to like make entire systems.
Yeah, I'd say like we were, and well, you could speak for yourself. I was hurt and I wanted to make a change, but making the change helped with healing a bit. Mm-hmm. But we also waited until we were ready to receive any response from the feedback we had. So I think like our incidents happened and we didn't give our feedback until like a year later because we were more stable and ready to give that feedback. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't immediate.
It had given us the opportunity to do some strategizing and planning as well. Yeah, I think sometimes like, you know, when you're on the heels of an incident, you know, like you're in that active hurt phase and it's not good timing. And so I think like this really spoke to the ability to take your time. It's on your terms when you want to do reconciliation work, right? When you've been the one kind of injured in a particular scenario.
It's badass. The definition is badass. That's what that is.
I'll take it.
I like that.
But for folks, because I've had people reach out to me and like say, you know, I experienced this. What do you recommend? How do you recommend like helping places change? Like what's your advice for folks who are thinking, I want to help my clinic change for the better?
Can I plug an organization?
Yeah, you can.
Okay. Collaborate Consulting is an organization in the US that works with fertility clinics on gender and sexually diverse inclusion, in addition to many other aspects of inclusion, but they have great resources. They have free seminars. If the fertility clinic was serious about engaging in a consultancy, I'd really recommend them.
Ooh, okay.
But if someone wanted to do something on their own, what would you recommend? Where would you say they should start?
Your game plan, knowing, identifying the gaps is really like a first step. And what would remedy those gaps? You know, I think oftentimes people are on the defensive as soon as you're like, I have shit to say. And really laying it out creates an openness, I find, at least with receiving the feedback and then collaborating in building the system of change. Because I think like without that buy-in on the other side, like you're not going to get very far, right? Humans don't love change. And so you have to really be aware.
Yeah, I think the way we organized our talking points when we went in was we said, here's what happened, like fact, here's what happened. Here's how it impacted us then. Here's how it impacted us long term. Here's how it's for us a queer issue. And then we recommended other people to do the work. We didn't initially recommend ourselves because we weren't sure we wanted to, and we were still patients, so we wanted to entertain that distance. But then I also have had a lot of success. So since then, that clinic has referred me to other clinics in Canada. So I've worked with about 7 or 8 other clinics.
Wow, you got a whole business going.
Yeah, I did. I did.
Yeah.
And what I found to make a really big difference in terms of understanding and buy-in was using regional statistics. So as regional as possible, so municipal or in Canada, provincial or territorial and nationwide, to say, here are the percentage of people who are self-identifying as a part of this gender and sexually diverse community and their age group. And the other stat I found was that regardless of how someone identifies, the general population in Canada at the time that I did the statistic or the research, 70% of them were choosing where they went for services, who they wanted to work for, and where they bought their things from based on whether or not that company was proactively and visibly inclusive. So I'm like, not only is there a growing number of people in Canada for us that are identifying as a part of the community, your general population of people are also choosing whether or not they want to work with you based on your inclusive practices. So if you don't do this, you will become irrelevant.
Oh my God,
very
I
quickly.
Love you right now. I love
it's,
that.
And it's unfortunately crassly a business case.
Yeah. Okay. So you did all the change, you did the stuff. Now you have a business because you saw a need and you stepped right in. And now what's going on? What are you up to?
Yeah. So I did the consultancy on the side of my 9-to-5 for a few years, mm-hmm. 3 or 4 years, 5 or 6 years, something like that. I worked primarily with fertility clinics. Mm-hmm. I worked with a fertility pharmaceutical for a while as well. And then I landed I'm an inclusion manager now at an organization, a provincial organization. So I can do it full time now, which is really nice. And I am able to bring in a lot of different aspects of inclusion and intersection into the work.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great.
And when we spoke, were y'all still pregnant?
No, not yet. That was the big thing when we spoke is that we hadn't had any success in pregnancy yet.
Oh my God. So yeah. What's happened? What's going on?
Well, the day that the episode aired, we had just done our embryo transfer. Mm-hmm. So I think we were 3 or 4 days from the embryo transfer that mm-hmm. actually worked.
Yeah.
So you're telling me I made a baby. I made a baby. That's what you're telling
it's
me?
It's all you.
It's you.
It's all you.
We credit you. It was kind of funny, though, because I feel like we're going to fall into a bit of a cliche realm, but when we spoke to you last, we had been really actively trying through a bunch of different channels for 5 years. And we'd done like the second round of IVF and had been able to have 10 embryos come out of that round, which amazing. Felt quite successful. But the first two didn't take. And it was like a return to that place of despair or hopelessness where it's just like, man, we're into like year 5 and like, so you know, it's a lot. And so Amanda was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm like really done with this. Mm. And I feel like I was the one that was like begging and pleading. I'm like, just one more time, just like one more, like we have all these embryos, like let's just, you know, give it a good kick at the can. And so I think kind of begrudgingly, you're
oh,
like,
oh yeah, I was crying on the way into the clip.
She like, was not know. Having it.
Gab oh, was God. Out of town that day as well. And I was crying on the way into the clinic. I'm like, every part of my body does not want to do this today, but I'm doing it because you went through so much to get those eggs. I'm like, I will give you one more, but I'm like, I can't do this again. And that was the one that worked.
That worked. And it was kind of funny because, you know, I think like having gone through so many like failed attempts when we had first received confirmation that we had a viable pregnancy. Mm-hmm. I don't think either of one of us like believed it at all.
Oh, of course.
And I remember I was so dug in and private by that point because I think we'd had so many heartbreaks that I was like, I don't want to tell anyone anything. Like I wanted to wait till literally we were birthing before saying, oh yes, we were pregnant. Now we have a kid surprise. And no one would like, you know, like it was COVID. No one saw us. Like we could pull it off, right? So
I was kind of low-key same way because I had gone through so much and everybody knew and everybody asked. I was like, I don't want to say anything. I don't want to talk about it. And I didn't want the attention. I just wanted to be left alone. And my wife, Anne, was like, oh my God, this is amazing when we found out. And I was like, is it though?
I don't think we really started to let our guard down until the 20-week ultrasound. Mm. When people were really happy for us, it felt uncomfortable because it didn't match where we were at. So we were very protective of our emotional space until we felt.
Yeah, because it's a trauma.
Yeah.
So any other updates you want to share with us?
Yeah. Well, no, you go ahead. I talk a lot.
She does. She give her the mic, ladies and gentlemen. She will run with it. Yeah. So I was actually going to just like put a warning out there for you because Amanda might go into labor immediately.
Oh my God. I know.
So we're pregnant now with our second. And the hilarious part about that is that once our first kid was getting old enough to consider, like, let's maybe think of our second.
Yeah.
We were like, okay, well, given that the first took 5 years, like, we should really get on it because anticipating that, like, we're going to have another 5 years and, like,
right.
getting into, oh, like, okay. kind of the mm-hmm. the senior realm of our own age group, mm-hmm. that we were like, okay, like, trying to, like, manage that for ourselves and what we wanted within, like, our own timelines. And so we went and, like, started and we, like, all of our expectations were in the fact that this won't take and we're just going to go through a bunch of embryos. But of course not. This one, like the first transfer worked this time.
Holy shit.
And so we'll have our second in like a matter of weeks or like maybe today. I don't know.
Today, because I make babies. This is established today.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So they'll be almost like 2 years apart to the day. And
wow. Oh, my God. Yeah. Yay. Congratulations. And holy shit, it happened on the first
trip. This one wants is already talking to me about a third.
Oh, my God.
I'm like, listen.
I'm trying to prep her, you know?
We got to take turns if this is going to
Man, we still have embryos. I feel like let's give it a couple kicks at the can, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is actually why this episode was so, like, poignant and personal
let's,
for
let's
us.
Let's talk about that because we spent a lot of time talking about systems and our families have to go through these systems like so much, right? But the two coming in, Carrie and Angie, kind of went mm-hmm. rogue, did away with the system route. They got donated embryos from a Facebook group from a gay male couple and ended up getting pregnant. And it's like a real pay it forward queer baby making story because these embryos traveled all over. I lost track at one point when I was re-listening. Right? I'm like, wait, who
crossed
has
the border
embryos
a couple
now?
Times?
Like, where are these with a clutch
babies,
of embryos?
Those babies did more traveling than I've done in the last couple of years.
But you, Amanda, were saying their story kind of hit home a little bit.
Yeah. So we have how many do we have left? Six left.
Yeah.
And so the question, like, you can't pay for storage for life, right? So right. we've been thinking about like what do we want to do with them and so it was really interesting to hear about the experience of folks who have built their family through embryo donation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one thing that really stood out for me and what I love about this episode as well, I love queer community and I feel like this was true building community, you know, where everybody understands each other's struggles in a way that other people really cannot mm-hmm. and like wants to support others in achieving their family building goals. And like everyone was a contributor in different ways. And I just thought it was such a heartening episode, especially given like the baseline struggle mm-hmm. that everybody goes through. So yeah, really beautiful.
I agree wholeheartedly. And that was like my big takeaway too. It's a beautiful story. We don't want to give too much away, but y'all are going to love this episode. And I'm so happy to have had you two back and I hope to hear from you more, but you're about to be in baby number two land. And that's an interesting place. It's an interesting place.
That's right. You know, I'll have a lot of time to sit and listen to podcasts for sure.
That's true. You can send
me notes. Do voice memos instead of typing things out though. That'll be easier.
Yeah. Send me some voice memos. We'll do updates by Amanda and Gab. It has been a joy talking to you all and I can't wait to speak to you again. Can't wait to hear about baby. So you have to let me know.
Absolutely.
We have to tell you know who to roll the tape. I don't know if you know who it is, but those cratchety old ladies.
That's
Helen
right.
and Beulah, would you all like to do
sitting over there with the nail flat files just waiting for their turn.
Can you tell those two ladies to please roll this tape? Because we need this interview to get started.
Helen, Beulah.
Roll the tape!
Queer Family Podcast.
Wait, Helen, before you roll that tape, this is Jamie's daughter, Rose. I have to tell you that you should join my mom's Patreon. My mom's Patreon. My mom works really hard on this show, but even with the sponsors, she really doesn't make enough profit to hire a real assistant or a team. So please go to Patreon. Patreon.
Patreon.
Please go to Patreon. So please go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast and join now. You'll do a good thing and get bonus content. She really loves this stuff.
Love is love is love is love.
Hi, Carrie and Angie.
Hello.
I'm so happy to have you here. Before we get into the whole nitty gritty of it, everybody needs to know who you are. So I'm going to get a little timer and we're going to do your 30-second elevator pitch of who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad.
Queer Fam Squad. Okay.
All right. On your mark, get set, go.
Okay. I'm Carrie.
I'm Angie.
And we are... We are parents of an amazing donor-conceived kiddo who we made through embryo donation. We are excited to be here today when we are not chasing after our
two-year-old
and many, many critters.
All of our critters.
Angie trains dogs. Yep. I'm a therapist to people and have a fertility coaching business.
Boom. Under 30 seconds. You did it. That was amazing. Even when you got a little nervous when you saw that clock in front of your face.
That clock is not okay.
But you know, I'll never cut you off. It really doesn't matter.
Especially since all I've been listening to is that you don't cut us off and like all these nice things pressure. On the podcast. Here, hang on.
I don't cut you off, but I do put a clock in front of your face just to add some pressure because it makes it fun. Yeah. Okay,
you did great, babe.
You did great. You both did. So let's take it back. You have a child through embryo donation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Amazing. And I can't wait to get into that. Before we do that, we need to take it all the way back. We need to take it back to the beginning of you two and then the beginning of baby talk. Let's go there.
So we coincidentally also met via kind of the Facebook. We had a ton of mutual friends. And we'd lived in the same town for like
a long time, like
seven or eight years. Yeah. And you know how Facebook will like suggest friends? Well, they suggested Carrie and I was like, oh, wow, she's really cute. And so I just started kind of Facebook stalking her like years back.
Well, I was like, who is liking all my pictures? So I asked a friend.
She asked one of our mutual friends. Yeah.
Yeah. And she was basically like, oh, you know, Angie. You know, you should know Angie.
Oh, look at that.
So I played it cool and was just like, do I know you? Do I actually know you? And she was like, no, but you should.
And ooh, there you go, Angie.
Yeah.
And so
slipping in those DMs.
We met for tea.
Yeah, we met for tea.
3-hour coffee date.
And then that was it. Yeah.
That was it.
And
so lesbian. Wait, do you identify as lesbians?
Yeah, we do. Mm-hmm. Okay. She, her, lesbians.
So lesbian.
We didn't U-Haul it, though.
No, we didn't U-Haul it. Yeah.
Love at first sight. We had a long coffee/tea date. And then where does baby talk come in?
So we met in 2015. Yeah, 2015. Mm-hmm. And we got married in 2018. And we knew.
We knew that we wanted a family.
We knew we wanted kids.
Yeah.
And we were older. So we thought at the time.
How old?
Now we know that's not so true. 35 and 36
36.
So we felt like it was older. Mm-hmm. So we knew we didn't want to wait a ton. That was really the conversation we had. We were like, we knew we wanted to try pretty soon after we got married. Because I can remember saying if I'd met you earlier, if we'd gotten married earlier, it would have been nice. Be careful what you say. It would have been nice to wait a few years before we had a baby. Well, that happened anyway.
Yeah.
Dum, dum, dum.
Yeah. Which worked out. And looking back, I am glad it happened that way.
Yeah. But. So we started trying via IUI at the end of 2018.
Before we get into those details, what was the conversation around who would carry? Was it an easy decision?
Oh, yeah. She's always had the desire to carry a child. And I feel like it would be a fun science experiment. Like
She's like, oh, I guess I'll do it if I have to.
If I have to.
And right. I'm a therapist and I work with people. I'm like, I don't know if we want this to be something that you have to do.
And she was just like, I've always wanted to carry a baby. And I'm like, you do it. It's all you.
It's great when it works out that way.
Yeah.
So lovely. So that was easy. And you decided you were going to start with IUI with frozen sperm from a
And we did the whole, like, I mean, I had spreadsheets, like I was going to
take it very seriously,
mastermind exactly what this child looked like and how all of this was going to go.
Yeah.
And
so you went deep into the search for
way Superman. Deep into the search yep. for, yeah.
And we did 7 IUIs total.
Oh, wow.
Which only wow. after hearing a lot from your show and doing a lot of research and listening to a lot of other people.
It's not a lot.
Well, it is a lot, it is. Actually.
Is it?
For, yeah. I like don't a, know. Lot I've heard people,
a lot of shows. People do like
a lot of people stop you after a few and is like, well, if this didn't work now, it's not yeah. going to work. We were all out of pocket. We had insurance that would help with the birth. We did not have insurance that would help with the fertility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for the sperm, did you buy a huge amount?
We bought as we went.
Oh, you bought as you went.
So we spent all this time.
I can't just nod.
Picking out the perfect donor. And then, of course, after like, what, 3, we ran out of him. Well, yeah. And they also suggested that we switch up.
Donor. Because it wasn't
donors.
Working. Right.
And so we tried this other guy. And then we switched donor clinics. I think we went through 3 donors.
Wow. So you had to keep going back to the drawing board every time. Ooh, yeah. Because you're out of pocket for each one. Each vial, you're like,
yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
all right, here we go.
So which we felt lucky to be able to do. I mean, the fact that we were able to scrounge and do that, we felt very fortunate. And we didn't ever think IVF would ever be. I mean, from the beginning, we did not think IVF was going to be in our...
If that is what we have to do, we're not going to do it.
Yeah,
it's just too expensive.
Oh, we sat through one pitch and we were like, there's no way. We consider ourselves okay, but we're not that.
Yeah, you know? Financially.
We're not that. Yeah. And then my mother basically came and said, I would love to do this for you, which was amazing. Really, really amazing. Really nice. Yeah. I know she secretly also really wanted a grandchild.
And
she loves being a grandma. But yes, she was able to offer us one. It was kind of like, I can try this, you know, one round.
Yeah.
So this was after the seventh IUI. Mom swoops in like the angel that she is and says,
yes,
I'm going to help you out. I have enough for one. So here's your shot.
Oh, yeah. God. And so then we decided, since we were going to do IVF, that we were going to try a reciprocal.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And so I went through all the drugs to get the retrieval and we did everything and I didn't end up making very much. I think we only got 10 and then only 7.
Yeah. It just kind of fertilized down.
Started at 10, then day 5, it was like 7. Then day 3, it was less.
And then by day 5, it was one that was like, this one's not going to do anything. And I think it's really interesting. Like, the fertility doctors talk about a lot about percentages and what things are going to look like. But when they talk about IVF, they make it sound, at least in our experience, they made it sound like, all right, we're going to go in there. We're going to get a bunch of eggs. We're going to put sperm in them. And you're going to have like this clutch of little eggs that we're going to try IVF with.
Yeah.
And so like when they called us and they're like, hey, you have this one and it's just like, it's here, but it's not going to make a baby. That was a huge blow because it was like, oh my God, we just went through all this. Right. I don't know. I felt naive. I felt really naive.
I also feel like not enough people stress, or at least we didn't take in that IVF is really 2 processes. It's the retrieval and
the transfer.
And so we didn't even feel like we got to try. And the other big thing emotionally for us is that this was going to be our last try,
right?
Period. That was going to be it.
That doesn't put any pressure on, you know what I mean?
No.
Like, that's
no. And we did that so many times.
Yeah.
Like this will be the last
time.
And we kept focusing on what, you know, all the, it was going to be okay and our lives were going to be okay and we'd have more money and more freedom and more this. And we just kept
rationalizing why it would be okay. Yeah.
But it was really that try.
Yeah.
And it was very sad.
IVF fails are so heartbreaking.
Yeah. And again, we had one that didn't work. I know, I listened to stories where people have 3, 4, 5, 6. I can't even imagine. I mean, that one was just devastating.
Yeah.
And clarity bringing. I think I was reluctant up until that point to say just how much I wanted a baby. I think I was nervous about wanting it too much. Mm. And when we went through that, I was like, I want this. I want this. And that was the first time I also realized that I would do it I don't know how it's going to happen, but we're going to have a baby in this house. That was when I thought for the first time, like adoption, like I didn't know any way would work.
Because it seems like genetics didn't really matter to either of you really that much, since you were going to do reciprocal. Well, first you started with carry your eggs, and then yeah. you switched to Angie's eggs. And
I think I was a little less attached from the beginning. Maybe that's because I had an opportunity to try a lot with mine. I don't remember feeling super attached. Angie,
I was definitely attached
to having genetics.
Mm-hmm, and I definitely went through a process around, I mean, that's why I was so kind of anal about the donor, like picking the donor, because it felt like that was my contribution.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Same. I totally get it. 100%.
So when we got the opportunity to try reciprocal, I was like, oh, wow, this is amazing. This is perfect. Because it's, you know, like everybody says, it's the way that, you know, perfect way a lesbian couple can have a baby.
Right. That's the closest to each of us sharing a part of that baby, right?
Yeah. Well, and when you go through so much, you think, and I feel like I've thought this so many times. I mean, I'm thinking it right now with something, you know, with our process. Like, sure, we've gone through all of this so that this can happen. Now it's all going to make sense. Like I was so sure that everything had led up to reciprocal. And I think that's the tricky piece of, and I don't even know 100% if I feel like things happen the way they're supposed to. I'm somewhere in between on that. But I think there's a lot of science that goes into this. And so it's a setup in some ways. It's just sometimes just not going to work. And sometimes it's going to work. And that is just it. That was the big changer for us when the IVF, when that didn't happen. Angie started to look at egg donation. She started to be convinced that my eggs were old and swindled up.
Both of ours were just like we had old eggs, raisins floating around in there.
So she started to look at
egg donation. But egg Angie, donation. How did you jump from genetics really matter? Like what was that?
In my experience, as I have gone through this process more and more, I just like, you just start to see like, you don't have any control. There's no control over any of this shit at all. And so then it becomes, all right, so what deep down really, really, really honestly matters? And what deep down really, really honestly mattered was that we have a baby together and we, you know, get to kind of walk through this journey with this other being and get to be a huge part of its life, whether we're genetically or biologically connected, spiritually connected, whatever. And so it's just, I feel like the less control I start to realize that I have, the more open I can be to other possibilities. I also, in the very beginning, was really kind of freaked out about having a known donor, especially if I wasn't going to be genetically connected to the baby, because I felt like I was going to be like this third wheel piece, you know? So like, I went through this like crazy metamorphosis over this whole process, because then we go from all of this to, all right, let's try an egg donor to, all right, screw it. Let's do embryo adoption where we know the donor and like,
I'm
cool with that, you know?
Yeah, that's beautiful. What you just said, that whole journey, it's fucking beautiful. And I think that folks at home are going to listen, and it's going to help some of them who are going through a tough time getting to the place where they finally have that baby. So thank you for sharing that. But wait a second. We haven't explained about this whole known donor / embryo.
Yeah. How we even got to embryo donation.
Right. So now you're going to egg donation, and then what happens?
Well, we just started looking at egg donation.
So we looked at egg donation, and that's really expensive. And, you know, our clinic was really cool because they actually refunded us the transfer part of the IVF.
Because you never did it.
Because we never did it.
Which we really appreciate. It was helpful.
Yeah.
It would have been great if they were like, we'll give you one more retrieval.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It would have been nice. Yeah, but okay. Doesn't work that way.
It was like we were looking at egg donation, and all of a sudden we found this Facebook group, or somewhere we referenced embryo donation. Embryo donation, embryo adoption. It seems like they're sort of used interchangeably. It seems like people are wanting to move more towards embryo donation because it changes some of the legality stuff.
Right.
With it, because it's not technically adoption. It's more of a transfer of property.
Yes.
Right.
You can't sell embryos. And so that's right. another thing. They're free. But basically, I just remember us kind of coming upon this term that I had never heard about.
Yeah.
We had just had this big loss, stumbled into this Facebook group.
Yeah.
And we just kind of were open to this world. And then someone, I think I asked a question or something, and someone sent us to an LGBTQ embryo donation page.
Yeah.
Because that's a thing, because there are some organizations who will not donate to queer folks.
Yeah. Yeah. And we never even talked to an organization. I think we checked with our fertility clinic. Yes. It was like a 6-month wait list. Yeah. And it was cost a lot. This was where we were kind of like, right. Wait, we can go, because we started to figure out, okay, this is not regulated.
Right.
Facebook groups can do this for free.
They're going to charge us $6,000.
They're going to cost, it's like $9,000. Yeah.
To just talk to them about it.
So we were like, that doesn't make sense. So we basically put up, before we even really knew everything, including how we felt, I feel like we just like put up this profile and just like, let's just see. It was really late at night. We just did this profile. Mm-hmm. And we talked to a few people that were not what we were looking for.
We did not have the same idea of what we wanted our families to look like.
Not what we were looking for.
What were you looking for?
We didn't know, but we did know what we weren't. We didn't know 100% we were looking for. But you know how you kind of sometimes talk to people and you're like, this is not what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
It was like one of those.
Yeah. It was a lot of, in order for this to happen, you know, in order for us to donate our embryos to you, we want to ensure that you will come to
our location
once a year. So all the children can play together and
like legally, like you would have to sign legal agreements to that. And so we kind of steered clear of that.
Yeah,
and
we didn't want to like new family. We just wanted a baby.
Right. Right.
I didn't really know any of it.
I was like, I don't want to deal with other new people.
Yeah, that was how. Yeah, but we also like just didn't want to sign anything that we would go anywhere once a year. I'm like, well, this is our vacation. What are you talking about?
Right.
And then we just had somebody reach out to us. We had basically a gay male couple reach out to us, and they had conceived through surrogacy 3 years prior. They were living in another country. The embryos were still here. And we just kind of started talking, and that felt more in line with what we did want. They were using language that felt good to us. Like, obviously, these would be your children, but or this would be your, you know, it felt safer, I think.
They understood the queer piece of it.
I think so. Yeah. I think so.
This is our only option to make a family.
Yep. And they were going to make us. And we had to legally sign that we would donate to, if we didn't use all the embryos, we would donate to another queer person or couple.
Paying it forward. Yeah, those guys paying it forward.
Yeah. And great. So, yeah, they really are. They're great. And they had a lot of embryos.
Yeah, they had 19.
Lucky ducks.
Yeah, a lot of embryos.
And they were done. They were finished.
They were done. Yep. They had twins. So they sent half of them to Canada and half of them to us.
I just want to say, I have spoken to a lot of like donor conceived people who think there need to be a lot more regulations in donor conception and egg donation and sperm donation. And yes, I understand. Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
But I also, what would you say to somebody who said, you know, this, you getting these eggs off of Facebook is not ethical?
Yeah. You know, it's a good question. And I'm really glad that I'm not forced to answer that anywhere officially. Because I don't know the answer to that. I know that I feel grateful that we found, because it was somebody that used surrogacy to make their embryos, they did have to go through FDA regulations. So we kind of found that loophole in something that wasn't regulated. And there was actually a lot of testing that was done on the embryos. But they definitely didn't test us or know anything about us. And I don't know. I really don't know. I guess I just hope for the integrity of humankind. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I feel like it's so hard because, I mean, from our standpoint, we just want to grow our family.
Exactly.
And
this was your only way.
Yeah. And it's so hard with regulation, because once you get regulating, there's so much room for error and so much room for discrimination.
Right. Yeah. The loopholes and the red tape you have to go through, like, it's microaggression, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just like,
yes.
I mean,
a lot of people can, like, people of color can go to these donation sites and actually get people who look like them. And, you know, the big companies that they can't
get at the regular.
Yeah. And right. I mean, obviously that's not our story. You know, we didn't have that story, but it's still like, I don't know.
These regulations can, unfortunately, be inherently biased against marginalized groups, right?
Yes.
And so that's a case for the reason why we do the things we do to make our families. But I also just want to highlight for anybody who's listening who strongly believes in more regulations, and I do, I agree with regulations, but we also have to keep in mind our queer families and what that means for us.
Right.
Are you keeping the donation and the origin story a secret from your child? Is that the plan?
Oh, absolutely not.
No. Definitely right. not. Yeah. Definitely not.
I mean, we're already talking to him about it.
Yeah. We ordered books from the UK. The UK has some really great books. We had stuff ordered before he was even born. Always
we're part of the
planned.
DC network. Like, we definitely want him to know.
Yeah. And he has little donor uh-huh. siblings. Scattered around, and he has one in our town.
Yeah.
And so there will be contact.
And we keep contact with all the parents. Mm-hmm. And if the kids want to know one another, then we will absolutely make that happen.
Obviously, to some degree, everyone knows he's donor conceived.
Obviously, because
not everyone knows he's embryo donation. A lot of people assume he's genetically connected to me. And not everyone knows what embryo donation is. I mean, I have really learned that a lot of people don't. So there's a lot of
people are like
educating and
what?
Do you do that?
Oh, yeah. Okay. and that will be a complex layer to his story, I think, a little bit. And we're very aware of that and want to be very sensitive to that as well.
And you're already having the conversation. And so I just wanted to highlight that because I didn't want that to just slip by and us not say it, because it's really important that we make this
important.
Distinction. Yeah. Yes, we are making our families in these very non-traditional ways, these out-of-the-box ways. And yes, they can have complications, but we are doing everything we can to mitigate those complications with communication and openness and honesty.
Yeah.
And I think across the board, give or take maybe one or two families that I've spoken to in the over 200 that I've spoken to, that is the case across the board with our families and how we talk about our families, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to take a second and put you on a soapbox there just to highlight. We're doing it right. So, okay, but I interrupted your story. We don't even have Jasper yet. Well, what happened?
I mean, after everything we went through, it was so surprisingly quick and easy in some ways. You know, it was like legal documents, shipping. There they were. We had some embryos.
Got her little womb all ready and raring to go.
Your womb.
Yep. And we had one transfer that did not work.
Mm-hmm.
And the second transfer, where before we realized what we were doing, we agreed to put two in. They were frozen in pairs. I don't know why doctors do that.
Huh.
If any doctors are listening, stop freezing embryos in pairs.
I think they do that because the other one gives one of them a better chance at survival, but it also gives them both a chance at survival.
So. I know. I suppose so. Either way, large chance of twins there.
Yeah.
We put two in. One took. That became our amazing child.
Wow. Amazing. So the embryo donation was the key, the missing piece.
And Jasper was the first of the rest
of the donated.
Of the donated kiddos that were born. So after that, there was another set of twins born. And then
last year.
And then another.
And then another little one was just born recently.
So four, like six kids total.
Mm-hmm. And we actually donated two. So we did not, we were not going
so this
to have
is part two.
The
G. Carey part
two. We were not going to have another child. We just considered it truthfully, just a miracle to get one. We just never thought it was going to be in the cards to have two. And we did not expect to be handed a bunch of embryos.
Right. But six embryos total?
We got 10 embryos total.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. So we had seven left.
We had seven left.
Jasper was made.
And we had a couple come to us through a friend of a friend and just wanted to hear about the process because they, just like us, had never heard of it. They had gone through several years of infertility and fertility struggles. We basically hung up that phone call. Angie and I were on the same page with that. We just had the same thought. We were like, should we give them some? Yeah. We should give them some. Like they're gay, they're queer, you know, they identify, you know, they're
That's
in
the
our
contract.
Yep, yeah. They're the contract. We should give them some. We have seven.
Yeah.
And so we did. We gave them four.
The second we talked about it,
we couldn't give them all away. Like I was very aware, like, I can't give them all away. I can't do it. And so we kept three. And that was the beginning of us realizing that we did want another child.
Wow.
We tried with those three.
Okay.
That did not work.
Damn.
That was our first pregnancy loss. Out of all the other tries we had, we had tries that didn't work, but we had our first pregnancy loss. That sucked.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that sucked. It sucked, and I can't believe it was our first one.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Yeah.
I mean, our first positive pregnancy test was Jasper, so that's cool. And then we thought we were out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
We were like, this is it.
Right.
And we didn't want to keep going. We don't want to keep going past Jasper's clutch.
We call it a clutch of embryos.
Oh, the clutch. Of, yeah. I like that. Yeah. A clutch of embryos. That's the name of your episode. Yes.
That's right. It.
We wanted him to be genetically connected to.
Yeah.
That was a part of why we wanted mm-hmm. to have a second child is because.
Yeah. Definitely not the only reason. I don't think that would be.
No,
great.
definitely not the only reason. Yeah. But it's like, that'd be cool for him to have a full sibling.
With a very unique conception story.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be nice. Then I had a conversation with the paternal donor who basically said, yes, that couple is having a baby, have baby. So we didn't know.
So the ones who had the paternal donor has the twins that are.
Yeah. And then there's right. And then the rest of the embryos that were in Canada.
That, so basically. We got 10 and they got 9.
Yeah.
Right. And so we basically learned that
they were pregnant.
Oh, and that they have probably extras.
Right.
Gotcha. Okay.
Well, we didn't know. There was no talk about extras. We didn't know. We just introduced ourselves. Hello. Talked about a Zoom call. Had a Zoom call. Met because they wanted to see our child. Talk to us about the process. Just all of that. And basically through that, I can't remember how it came up. We all of a sudden, it was just kind of like
we said,
basically realized when they had extras, or we said, if you do,
if you have any extra, we'll take them.
Yeah. Something like that. Oh, it was something organic that happened like that. And they basically said they did and reached out to us and said that they would want that.
Yeah.
As soon as they got their bearings, right. They hadn't had their babies yet.
Right.
Right.
And then we just kind of stopped. Mm-hmm. And we were like, okay, well,
just kind of waiting.
Turned it over. Like we do so many times. Right.
Right.
Turned it over.
And no control. Out of control.
No control.
No control. Right.
Okay.
And then
on her birthday, they reached out to us and said, we're ready.
Which we did not think would happen so soon.
Yeah.
Wow. And so
here we are.
And
they gave you
four
embryos.
Yeah.
Holy shit. And now you are.
Now we're trying. Yep.
How exciting.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So exciting. I really hope I'm sending you all the baby dust.
Yes. Thank you.
Baby dust. It's going to work out.
Thank you.
Four tries.
I know for me, I've always felt really, it's felt really important for me to be excited and know what I want, but also be okay with however it happens.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a bit a part of who we are, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
I think that's a great lesson. And you've said it multiple times in this episode is if you can let go of some of the control you're feeling about how you want it to go, you have to let control because the truth is, the bottom line is we don't have control.
Zero.
We don't have control of this.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No. Well, and I think sometimes we can't see what amazing things are going to come from it either. Like that's another thing. I mean, we thought about that a lot if we had gotten pregnant that first time.
Mm.
I mean, we were so new in our marriage and we were such a different place by the time we had our child.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I don't wish pain on anyone. And there can be some gifts in the waiting and even the loss and all of that.
Yeah.
There it is.
And I just have to shout out to you, Jamie, because I've listened to your podcast. Like I've started from the very beginning. And I will tell you
since I told her to.
Yes. And thank you. I would like to send a thank you to Carrie. A personal thank you to Carrie.
Thank you.
Worldwide, international thank you for inviting me to listen to Jamie's podcast. But your podcast is the first place that I have found where I can hear people talking about the struggles that I have gone through, like just, you know, talking about the need for genetic connection and all of those things that kind of like the non-caring parent goes through. I searched high and low. I looked for books. I looked for like, it's just nothing out there.
It's these queer centric struggles that we face that deserved being highlighted. So deserved to be.
And that's why I started Embodied Pride too, which is my coaching business, because it's all for LGBTQ folks too, who are on a family growing plan.
Talk about it. Talk about it. I want to hear about it.
So I'm a therapist. I'm a trauma and somatic therapist for like 13 plus years, which basically means I specialize in how trauma and grief and big emotional experiences manifest in the body. Mm-hmm. And so through my own process, through working with people, you know, through my practice on a fertility journey, seeing friends, all of that, I just realized, I mean, it was like a calling that we do not have enough support for LGBTQ folks in this planet at all. And especially when they're growing their families. Mm-hmm. And so I started Embodied Pride, and it specializes in emotional wellness, I would say, the emotional side of really helping all the stuff we're talking about, the twists and turns. And I actually just launched a free mini course for LGBTQ folks who are wanting to kind of step off that emotional roller coaster, remove emotional blocks. Ooh. That is available on my website.
Tell people where they can find you.
embodiedpride.com, and my Instagram is @embodied-pride.
And also, I have to bring it back to one thing we were talking about before we started recording. Angie, you were talking about, because you're in the process right now, you're going to these fertility clinics for the embryo donation, and you were talking about these forms. And this is this is the reason why these stories need to exist, and this is the reason why businesses like yours, Carrie, need to be out there, because there needs to be a huge systemic change in the way this fertility process is done. Angie, what's going on with those forms?
Across the board. Like, so the past couple times that we've gone in, there's forms that both she and I have to sign. Mm-hmm. And for Carrie's line, it says female parents or patients, and then has the line for her. And
sometimes.
Mine, it says male patients, and I just very, like, very aggressively scribble it out and put female, and, you know.
You had to cross father off of the birth certificate.
Yeah, we did too.
Any fertility journey is hard, no matter what orientation you are on, but the queer fertility journey is just, from the start, it is kind of in this pocket of just, it's going to be hard. Maybe not for everyone. I hear these stories about people. Good for them.
Yeah.
But for most of us, there are twists and turns, and it is just a ride. Turns,
but you're also like working in a system that wasn't designed for you, but it's the only system not the only system to use, but it's like, it's one of the main systems you can use to make your family. And it's just, you know, it's like,
well, it's either you use the system or you go rogue, and then, you're opening yourself up to all other kinds of complications.
Oh yeah.
Right. Which, and no matter what, at some point you're getting into the system. At some point you're going to have to enter the system.
The legal system.
Right?
Yeah.
Because you have to adopt your child. I mean, we both adopted ours.
Had to adopt our baby, even though she carried him. Yep. And the judge actually said, I'm so sorry that you're having to go through this and it being the good time judge that we live in.
Such a good judge,
Yeah, like, you carried this baby for 9 months. I can't believe that you're actually having, because in our state, I actually had more legal rights to our baby because there's the whole step-parent adoption law.
Right.
And there's nothing, she's considered a surrogate.
Right. And there's because, no, oh, yes.
And there's no, and there's no law for that.
For a parentage of surrogate. Things need to be fucking changed.
It's, like, it's really, really,
yeah.
Yeah.
And then now in the news recently, so many non-bio moms are losing custody. There's been two stories around the country of these non-bio moms that have lost custody because they didn't do the second parent adoption.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't even.
Yeah.
Can't
it's even so important. If I, I cannot emphasize enough, do the legal stuff.
Yeah.
Do it.
Done.
And again, I just have to say, right? We had the resources to do that.
Yes.
That was right. Not cheap.
Yeah.
That was not. So that's absolutely. Another thing.
Yeah.
It's a lot. There's a lot that needs to be done. And so, you know, you telling your story is a big part of hopefully the future change that we will start to see and that we have seen. Change has come. It's just tiny steps, it feels like. I just want to thank you both for sharing this beautiful story, and I'm so happy for you and all of us listening and all of us in this room, my dog included, are sending all the baby dust in the world.
And thank you, Jamie.
Hand gesture
receiving.
Just that's receiving. Right. Receiving. Receiving.
The Queer Family Podcast.
Well, folks, I really hope you enjoyed that episode. I know I did. What a good story. But the conversation is not over, folks. Be sure you're following the show on all the socials. We're on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at the Queer Family Podcast. You're going to get photos of all the guests there, some videos, and just, you know, all around fun from yours truly. Who doesn't want that? Don't miss out. You don't want FOMO. Nobody wants FOMO. And don't forget to join me on Patreon to help me create this super important queer content. You're going to head to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast to sign up and get that bonus content. And one more thing, if you love this show and want to represent your love for us and our beautiful families, you need to head to our shop and get some Queer Family Podcast merchandise. We've got so many designs, and you can put these designs on any product in the store. We've got t-shirts, mugs, hoodies, notebooks, face masks, laptop cases. You're just going to go to tpublic.com and search for the Queer Family Podcast. Or you can find the shop on our website at thequeerfamilypodcast.com. There's so many ways, so many ways. All right, folks, that's it for this week. Tune back in next week for another episode all about family, but with gay.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.